Hello, this is Nancy Pippin with the Pantograph for Friday, March the 6th, 2020. And we see that today it's going to be partly sunny with a high of 44 and a low of 23. And we would remind you that you can always get updates by using the hashtag Y with a capital W, H, capital B, capital N. If you want more information, or thepantograph.com for other or more extensive articles. And we see that today's headline starts out with tasty tradition, time for syrup. And we have a picture of Stephen Funk Halls. Stephen Funk, he's hauling a vat of maple sap with a tractor Monday at Funk's Grove. Tens of thousands of gallons of sap will be processed into Funk's Grove maple syrup and sold at the store south of Bloomington on Old Route 66. And amid sap tapping in Funk's Grove, store offers treats. Mike Funk is hoping for at least one more good freeze. That's what it will take to keep the sap flowing at Funk's Grove pure maple syrup so they can hit the sweet spot of 100,000 gallons of sap, said Funk, who operates the business. It takes 40 to 50 gallons of sap to make a gallon of syrup, the original spelling of syrup, S-I-R-U-P, designates a product made from boiling down sap without adding sugar. Early this week, workers were nearly halfway to their goal, and the sap was flowing freely when the retail store at 5257 Old Route 66, Shirley, opened Monday. We have a long day ahead of us, Funk said, checking the temperature of boiled sap, flowing in the sugar house. Syrup, that's S-Y-R-U-P, isn't the only thing available at the store, which also offers maple cream, maple candy, pancake mix, and Route 66 memorabilia. Maple ice cream made by Mike and Debbie Funk's niece, Lisa Kirby, is new this year. She has made it for family and friends, but went through the process of getting a license so the ice cream could be sold to the public. It has only three ingredients: cream, a little bit of salt, and Funk's Grove syrup. The ice cream was a hit with the family of Nathan and Abigail Glau, who drove from their home in Sector to buy 6 gallons of syrup. "We usually come on opening day," said Nathan. "We can't wait any longer," said Abigail. "In addition to pancakes and waffles, the family uses syrup," moving over to page two, "in hot cocoa, oatmeal, a berry crunch dessert, and just about anything we would use sugar in, she said. The children enjoyed it. I enjoyed ice cream samples. Michaela, 11, proclaimed, "It's the best." The ice cream is sold in 6-ounce containers. Kirby expects it to be popular with summer travelers. The process all starts with trees, which have one or two sap holes, depending on their size. Mike Funk said the operation has about 4,400 tap holes this year, with most feeding sap into collection tanks via tubing. They also hang 500 to 800 buckets on trees with sap. Sap is collected by hand and emptied into tanks hauled on utility tractors. It can be muddy, strenuous work with a gallon of sap weighing close to 10 pounds, but the guys working in the Grove don't seem to mind. "It's good exercise," said Jason Reitmeier of Normal, who grew up in the Funk's Grove area. "I love doing this every year. You know, it's spring when the sap is running. Ideal conditions are daytime temperatures in the 40s and nighttime temperatures in the 20s. Friday night's forecast calls for the low 20s. Funk said a good sap run is complicated. Swings in temperatures cause cells in the trees to expand and contract, creating a capillary effect that draws up the sap. He explained, "Think of it like a straw or a sponge. However, if daytime temperatures stay too warm for too long, which would be like the upper 50s or 60s, the sap holes start to close," said Funk. "We may have a short season," he said, but he wasn't too worried thanks to a strong flow of sap earlier in the week. When he's not making maple syrup, Funk grows corn and soybeans, which had their own weather issues last year. Corn harvest and drying went way into December, Funk said, which put a crunch into preparation for sap season. Usually we have a break. Last year's sugaring season ran into what usually would be planting season, but it was too wet to plant anyway, Funk said. He's hoping for a better spring planting season this year, but for now his focus is on making syrup. Every season comes down to 2 weeks to hit that sweet spot, he said. And this article was presented by Lenore Sabota. And we will return now to the front page, where we also find an article about State Farm. State Farm Seeds Bank, U.S. Bank Insurers in Strategic Alliance. U.S. Bank will assume State Farm Bank's existing deposit and credit card accounts. The bank and insurer announced this Thursday. State Farm agents will be able to introduce U.S. Bank deposit products and co-branded credit cards to State Farm customers. About 975 of the 1,300 State Farm Bank's employees are based in Bloomington. Given the anticipated hiring needs at State Farm in 2020, our hope is that many will consider available opportunities in other departments of the company, said spokeswoman Jenna Morrissey Fisher. State Farm, the nation's largest home and auto insurer, started its bank in 1999 and offered deposits, checking, and credit card services that were marketed through its network of nearly 19,000 agents. State Farm Bank had assets of $16.9 billion at the end of 2019, ranking it in the 100th largest bank in the country. U.S. Bank, the nation's fifth largest bank, and had assets at that point of nearly $500 billion. Within the State Farm portfolio of businesses, chiefly insurance services, the bank was also relatively small. State Farm Bank contributed $59 million, or about 1% of the $5.6 billion profit that State Farm earned last year. State Farm and U.S. Bank called their relationship a strategic alliance that will initially involve deposit and credit card accounts, but may eventually expand to include vehicle loans and business banking services. Financial details weren't disclosed. U.S. Bank has branches in 26 states, while State Farm has agents all across the country. This is mostly about innovation, trying to do things in a new and different way for customers, said Tim Welsh, the vice chairman of consumer and business banking at U.S. Bancorp. The alliance is part of a broader strategy by State Farm to exit banking operations. In addition to assuming State Farm Bank's existing deposit and credit card accounts, the two companies are exploring working together to provide State Farm customers with access to vehicle loans and business banking products, the companies said in a joint statement. State Farm has been committed to helping people for nearly 98 years. U.S. Bank is an outstanding institution that shares our commitment to strong customer relationships, said State Farm President and CEO Michael Tipsard. When we combine State Farm's deep customer relationship with the scale and capabilities of companies like U.S. Bank, we can help significantly more people. The transition is scheduled to begin later this year and into 2021. Current State Farm Bank customers do not need to take any action. We are excited about this new alliance with State Farm because it will help us reach more customers in the moments that matter most, said Andy Serser, Chairman, President, and CEO of U.S. Bank. It is a terrific opportunity to combine U.S. Bank products, services, and digital capabilities with State Farm's coast-to-coast network of agents. This relationship will provide State Farm customers with enhanced product operations while expanding U.S. Bank's reach into new and existing markets. State Farm last year began moving away from directly operating services associated with a bank. Last summer, it formed an agreement with Detroit-based Quicken Loans so that its agents who are qualified to originate home loans could do so with using Quicken Loans Rocket Mortgage platform. And this article was presented by the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and that was a contributor to this report. So we've covered the local harvesting of syrup and a local change to State Farm and the banking industry, and now we have BFD seeks downtown siren with voice feature. If people need to get in from outside in the event of an emergency in downtown Bloomington, the fire department wants to let people know with specific voice directions in addition to the blare of a siren. The Bloomington Fire Department wants to install an outdoor warning siren with public address capability on the roof of the Government Center at 115 East Washington Street in Bloomington. Now, this would mean that we would like increased capacity to provide information in case we need to direct people to safety. This was according to Fire Chief Brian Moore, as he told the Pantograph. Moore provided information about the iForce electronic siren to the McLean County Board Property Committee on Thursday afternoon. The government center is owned by the Public Building Commission, but McLean County Government and the City of Bloomington lease this space. Property Committee Chairman Josh Burnett told the Pantograph he and his family are among Central Illinoisans who support the farmers market and other festivals downtown. Having this added safety broadcast capability will help to ensure a better experience for all in case of inclement weather or other emergencies. Barnett presented this thought. Bloomington has 18 outdoor warning sirens throughout the city, including one on the roof of the former State Farm building across Washington Street from the Government Center. Moore said the communication with the new owners of the former State Farm building is that the siren could stay for the time being. The 18 sirens emit a sound for a severe weather alert and in the event of a military attack. They are tested on the first Tuesday of each month. The public address capability would allow the McLean County Emergency Management Agency or Emergency Management within the City of Bloomington to broadcast a recorded voice message to urge people to seek shelter and would also allow a live voice warning with specific directions if needed, Moore said. While the siren would be used most likely in a severe weather emergency, such as a tornado, it also could be used for other emergencies, he said. Given the number of downtown events, such as farmers market, in addition to the number of people downtown on a regular basis, including people waiting for buses in front of the McLean County Law and Justice Center. Locating the new siren downtown makes sense, said Moore. The voice feature would be audible within several blocks of the government center. Moore expects the siren with the public address capability to cost about $30,000 while in the fire department's budget for the fiscal year that ends on April 30th. The City of Bloomington would need to give final approval of this project, he said. He hopes to install the new siren before the end of summer. Normal has 11 outdoor warning sirens and has had one with a public address capability since June of 2018. This is on the roof of the Children's Discovery Museum in Uptown Normal, said Matt Swaney, the Normal Fire Department Public Information Officer. If there's a festival uptown and there's an emergency such as a tornado, we can direct people to specific locations to seek shelter, Swaney said. It's nice to know it's available if we need it, he said. And so that's looking to protect downtown a little better, give a little better warning in emergencies. So we'll see how that goes. And that concludes our readout for Friday, March 6th. And we will move on to some other news here. Let's see what's going on. Illinois has a fifth case of the virus, COVID-19. And so let's read about that. It says public health officials in Illinois reported Thursday that a fifth person in the state has been infected with the novel coronavirus, but they insist the overall risk to the public remains low. The latest case involves a man in his 20s who recently returned to Chicago from Italy, where more than 100 people have died from the disease caused by the virus COVID-19. The Illinois patient was being isolated Thursday at Rush University Medical Center and was reported in stable condition. We call this a presumptive positive, pending the final confirmation at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. This was according to State Public Health Director Izikai. And this was said during a press conference with Governor J.B. Pritzker. But meanwhile, as we trust our test results, the public health officials here in Illinois are quickly taking action, and the person is in the hospital. So far, all of the coronavirus cases in Illinois have been in the Chicago area. The first case was reported in January in a woman who had recently returned from Wuhan, China, where the virus initially broke out. She, in turn, transmitted it to her husband. The couple has fully recovered. In conjunction, we learned that the Senate okays $8.3 billion plan to fight the coronavirus. The Senate has passed an $8.3 billion measure Thursday to help tackle the coronavirus outbreak in hopes of reassuring a fearful public and accelerating the government's response to the virus, whose rapid spread is threatening to upend everyday life in the U.S. and across the globe. The money would pay for a multifaceted attack on the virus that is spreading more widely every day, sending financial markets spiraling again Thursday, disrupting travel and potentially threatening the U.S. economy's decade-long expansion. Thursday's sweeping 96-1 vote sends the bill to the White House for President Donald Trump's signature. Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, cast the sole no vote. The House passed the bill Wednesday by 415-2 vote. The plan would more than triple the $2.5 billion amount outlined by the White House 10 days ago. The Trump proposal was immediately discarded by the members of Congress from both parties. Instead, the bipartisan leadership of the House and Senate Appropriations Committee negotiated the increased figure and other provisions of the legislation in a burst of bipartisan cooperation that's common on the panel but increasingly rare elsewhere in Washington. In situations like this, I believe no expense should be spared to protect the American people, and in crafting this package, none was, said Appropriations Committee Chairman Richard Shelby, Republican of Alabama. In an aggressive plan, a vigorous plan that was received an overwhelmingly positive reaction. Trump was sure to sign the measure, which is almost a universal support. It is intended to protect confidence and calm as anxiety builds over the impact of the virus, which has claimed 12 lives in the U.S. The American people are looking for leadership and want assurance that their government is up to the task of protecting their health and safety, said Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont. The impact of the outbreak continues to mount. The British government is considering suspending Parliament for 5 months in hope of limiting the spread of the virus in the United Kingdom. And at this point, let's go back and look at some more points of history, and then we'll talk about road closing and Flix facts. So to day in history, today is Friday, March 6th, the 66th day of 2020. There are 300 days left in the year. Well, the highlight for today was that March 6, 1944, U.S. heavy bombers staged the first full-scale American raid on Berlin during World War II. In 1475, Italian artist and poet Michelangelo was born in Caprese in the Republic of Florence. Now, by 1834, the city of York in Upper Canada was incorporated as Toronto. Now, in 1836, the Alamo in San Antonio, Texas, fell as Mexican forces led by General Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna stormed the fortress after a 13-day siege. The battle claimed the lives of all the Texans' defenders, nearly 200 strong, including William Travis, James Bowie, and Davy Crockett. Your thought for today? Don't be consistent, but be simply true. This was by Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., U.S. Supreme Court Justice from 1841 to 35. And then we look at some road closings that are ahead that you might want to beware of. Constitution Boulevard in Normal. Northbound Constitution Boulevard from Uptown Circle to Mulberry Street will be closed from 5 a.m. to noon on Friday to remove seasonal lighting. The intersections of Constitutional Boulevard at College Avenue and Mulberry will remain open. Prescribed burn along Sugar Creek. The Town of Normal contractor Cardona will burn vegetation along Sugar Creek from East Vernon Avenue to the southwest edge of Anderson Park, but not through the park. This burn will begin about 10 a.m. Friday and will go for most of the day. The Normal Fire Department and Chittick Junior High School have been notified for this plan. So please be aware of those two areas. First, Constitution Boulevard in Normal, and then area around the Sugar Creek Park or Anderson Park. So that's east of Vernon Avenue to the southwest edge of Anderson Park. But it will not take place in the park itself. And the fire department is aware of it, as well as the local junior high that's in that section. And now let's go to Flick's Fact. Let's see what he's got to say. In its 160-year-plus history, one church in Bloomington Normal can boast having two former Illinois governors among its members. Can you name it? And he gives us an option of four churches. Let's see what they are. Okay, so 160-year history has to be part of it. Bloomington Normal area. And you've had two former Illinois governors among its members. The choices are A, Unitarian Universalist Church, B, St. John's Lutheran Church, C, Second Presbyterian Church, or D, Holy Trinity Catholic Church. So we're looking for the church. Has to be an old one. One of four in the area that was the home of spiritual home for two governors. A, Unitarian Universalist Church. B, St. John's Lutheran Church. C, Second Presbyterian Church. Or D, Holy Trinity Catholic Church. And if you said A, it is Bloomington's Unitarian Universalist Church, now at 1613 East Emerson Street. Illinois Governor Joseph Pfeiffer was a member there who served from 1888 to 1892, and Adelaide Stevenson II. He served as a member there from 1949 to 1952. And was a member there as well. So, congratulations to that congregation with the wonderful people that came from your midst. We appreciate them. And that about closes our first half hour. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Pantograph for Friday, March the 6th, 2020. So please stay tuned.